from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum this morning, new legislative and congressional boundaries for the state of California were officially unveiled on Friday. What will their effect be on California and its politics and on future races? We'll take all that and more up in the hour coming up. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In 2008, Californians voted to remove the redistricting responsibility from elected representatives and turn it over to a citizens commission. The bipartisan commission, selected in a random process overseen by the auditor's office, is made up of 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, and 4 independents. And it is the first of its kind, an independent citizens commission drawing the political boundaries rather than their being drawn by politicians. The 14-member commission redrew legislative and congressional boundaries and district maps for Congress, the State Assembly, the State Senate, and the State Board of Equalization, in a process which saw some 2,700 speakers heard at state public meetings and some 20,000 public comments heard. On Friday, the final drafts passed are expected to go into adoption with few changes by the 11th of August. And in this opening Forum Hour, we want to discuss what these changes will mean for California. Joining us from Sacramento is our Sacramento Bureau Chief, John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief of KQED-FM. And welcome, John.
Thanks, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Well, let's talk first with you about what at least has occurred as a result of the Citizens Commission. It was supposed to be nonpartisan. It was supposed to be transparent. It was supposed to increase competition. Has all that been successful?
Well, I think that's the great question, isn't it? I'd weigh in on a couple of those. I mean, I think that, you know, when voters took this into their hands to change the way that we draw political districts, they did that in 2008 with Proposition 11, and they added Congress to the mix with Proposition 20 last November. When the voters did this, you know, they believed that the system as it existed, where the legislature drew the political maps, was not viable. They believed it was an extreme case of what we now know as gerrymandering, which is, you know, influencing lines for your own political gain. They didn't like the process, which they were done behind closed doors. The maps were brought out at, quote unquote, public hearings at 3 a.m. And so they wanted a change. This clearly has been a dramatic change from that. These have been public hearings, public testimony, as you said there at the top of the broadcast. Lots of discussions, all in public, a lot of transparency. Will voters be happy with this? If the voters wanted a whole lot of competitive races around California, probably not. They're going to be more competitive races than there were before. But some of that is due to the fact that a lot of incumbents were drawn out of their safe districts. And so they're going to have to make decisions about retiring or, you know, facing a lot more competition. I think if the voters wanted perfectly neat, compact, little square districts up and down California, they're not going to be pleased with it because that's not the way. That's not how Californians live. That's not how the law dictates where you draw those lines. But I think if they wanted a chance at a transparent process, which is one of those criteria, then I think they could be relatively pleased with it. But, you know, the real question we have now is the public gets 2 weeks to look at these maps. The maps are done. Absent very, very, very small technical changes, they are final maps. And so the commission will give its official seal of approval on the 15th, 2 weeks from today. And then the question is, do the maps hold up? Are they challenged in court? Are they challenged by a voter referendum? Are either of those successful if that happens? And I think that really will be the long test of whether this was a successful product.
Well, there are more public hearings that are scheduled, and yet this is really kind of bottom line different playing field, isn't it?
It is, and I think that's really for a couple of reasons. First of all, you know, the political maps, legislature, Congress, State Board of Equalization, are redrawn every 10 years based on new census data. So California is a different place in 2011 than it was in 1991, and of course every decade back from there. So those demographic shifts are going to clearly change the political outcome. And I think, too, The most fundamental thing that the commission did, it was tasked to do this, it was mandated to do this in Proposition 11, is to ignore incumbency, to ignore where politicians live, to ignore partisan registration data, Democrats, Republicans. And so what they did is they drew districts based on population. They drew districts based on the Federal Voting Rights Act, which talks about the rights of minority voters and can you put enough minority voters in districts to give them effective representation outcome in the election. And they were drawn based on communities of interest, which was another mandate out of Prop 11 and Prop 20, which talked about people, you know, basically being represented in communities where they felt like as though there was a community, which is a bit of a difficult thing to determine. But incumbents were not part of this process. As a result, you've got some five dozen incumbents who woke up on, you know, the weekend to look at these maps after the dust settled and realize they're not sitting in the district they used to sit in or don't have a district at all anymore.
So, I mean, geography and ethnicity and even we should mention economic interests really trump not only incumbency but party registration in these boundary considerations.
Not only trumped but completely dominated. I mean, it was a zero for incumbency and partisan political registration of these districts. Now, as a result, I mean, you know, California remains to be a state dominated by Democrats. So as a result, you still see Democrats will be dominating the legislature, the congressional delegation. Could they have gotten more? Could they have gotten less? You know, again, if you had a partisan system in Sacramento in the legislature, you know, maybe those things would have happened. But as it is, I think it's going to be very fascinating to see. I think incumbents were the big losers. And so there will be some fresh blood in some way, shape or form in some of these political races.
Talking with KQED-FM's Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers, who is with us from the state capitol. What about you mentioned lawsuits. There's a likelihood of lawsuits and challenges and even talk about putting a referendum on the ballot. And particularly that talk is coming from the GOP.
Yeah, I think especially with the idea of a referendum, you've heard it from the state Republican Party and its chairman, Tom Delpagaro, who have suggested that they may want to file a petition for a referendum to have the voters overturn these maps. That, of course, would trigger an entire process where the state Supreme Court would have to get involved again. The lawsuits issue, I think, really comes down to the Federal Voting Rights Act, a 1965 law that dealt with the rights of minority voters. There are some minority activist groups in the state who believe that the commission did not draw enough maps, especially for Latinos, enough districts. The commission clearly drew more Latino-friendly districts than the legislature had drawn 10 years before. But they have some concerns in particular about the state Senate maps. They think that there could have been more of those. You know, their mantra is that if the voting rights, if you can draw a Latino-friendly district, the Voting Rights Act says you have to do it. I think that will certainly head to court. I think the commission knows that these are going to go to court. The question is whether those are successful legal challenges. And, you know, some observers have speculated that this is the very first time California's maps have been drawn in a public independent process like this. And the courts may be leery to overturn all of that work.
Well, let's bring a couple of the commissioners into this discussion. Vincent Barraba is a commissioner. He's California Citizens Redistricting Commission and founder of Market Insight Corporation. Joins us from Capitola this morning. Welcome, Vincent Barraba.
Hello.
Hi. Good to have you with us. We also have Cynthia Dye with us, who is also a commissioner and with the California Citizens Redistricting Commission and a CEO of Dynamic, that's DIA Consulting, here in San Francisco. Welcome, Cynthia Dye.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin with you. This seems to be, at least on the face of it, better for Democrats, more Democratic districts, but, well, more competitive races.
I was going to let the Republican answer that question.
Well, let's go to the Republican in a moment here. But, I mean, that seems to be at least the way things have fallen. And the question is, are Democrats happy with this for the most part? This was a transparent, for the most part, process, and it was supposed to be bipartisan, but yet it did fall down on having more Democratic districts.
Well, I can't speak for Democrats as a whole. I think Californians should be happy with the map. We did not look at party registration at all. We all worked very hard to make sure there would be fair representation for all Californians, and in terms of party registration, the chips kind of fell where they did.
Well, it was supposed to bring the process closer to the people and incorporate citizen input, but there have been complaints from interest groups being left out, the kind of disenfranchisement that John Myers alluded to before among Hispanics in the process after the commission particularly canceled plans for a second draft of the maps and postponed release by a day. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the process has been extremely open and transparent. We actually set aside a couple of days in the early round of input hearings for organized groups to present their maps, which the commission considered very seriously. And there seems to be a misunderstanding about, why we canceled the second round. I mean, we actually switched to a much more interactive process that used technology that would allow members of the public to be able to zoom down to the street level so that they could actually provide better comments for us. And we were able to use that feedback to develop much, much better maps that were the ones that we finally released.
So you're pretty happy with the process, and you feel that you have indeed fulfilled your mandate?
I think over 20,000 written comments pretty much says how much engagement there was by the public.
Cynthia Dygan is a commissioner with the California Citizens Redistricting Commission, and so is Vincent Barraba. Vincent Barraba, Republicans, as we've been saying, have not been happy. The California Republican Party saying it was not a transparent enough process, and they're considering a lawsuit or a ballot referendum. Can I get you to comment?
Well, I don't know how much more transparent it could have been. The fact that there are people speculating as to whether Republicans won or lost presumes that the size and the shape and the registration of the district determines who the winner is. Based on my experience, sometimes, who the quality of the candidate has an effect on who's going to get elected.
Now, I understand that, but there are Republicans who are upset, and yet Republicans supported the ballot initiative from the beginning.
Well, I think they probably should have, as should have anyone. One also has to face the fact that there's more registered Democrats in this state than there are Republicans. So you'd be a little startled if, in fact, it came out that there were equal number of districts that Republicans would have, because the registration figures, including not only more Democrats, but a significant number of declined states, somewhat is reflective of the fact that you would be a little bit startled if these districts came out with as many Republican potential districts as Democrats.
I think part of the concern among many in the GOP is that, it'll decrease and reduce influence of Republicans and maybe make a two-thirds majority of Democrats in the state legislature.
Well, our job was not to decide how many of each party was going to win. Our job was to decide the extent to which we could create districts that would meet the equal population and meet the requirements of the Voting Rights Act as the two highest priorities. And we went ahead and did that. And, I think people fail to truly understand how complex not only the population of the state is, but the topography of it, which really caused us to, create a lot of districts that where some people would look at and say, my God, that looks like a gerrymandered district. And in fact, it's long, and because of the population distribution and the length of some of these geographic areas. 19, if you take the 19 counties that are north of Sacramento, they make up about 30% of the landmass and about 4% of the population. So you're going to expect to have some fairly large districts.
What about these Latino organizations, though, that are upset because these new redrawn districts don't give Hispanics more political power, considering the increase in the population of Latinos in the state?
Well, I think to the best of our knowledge and ability, we met every requirement to the extent we could, again, based on all of the criteria we had to consider, including the topography. We created quite a significant number of Latino majority districts. Could anyone figure out a way to make another one? The answer is possibly yes, but then again, you had to worry about how that district ends up looking geographically. And I think that we'd be willing to and are in a position to defend the districts and the lines that we drew, given the population and the other requirements that are in Voting Rights Act.
So let me get you on record, Commissioner, and I'll ask the same question to Cynthia Dye. You felt that the process not only was transparent, but you were able to take politics and special interests out of the process to a great degree, if not totally?
Based on every meeting that I attended, and that was nearly all of them, I don't recall a situation where anyone particularly identified a partisan reason for doing anything.
Commissioner Dye, agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. I want to thank you both. There has been some criticism, though, of the cost of this process. The work may cost millions more than was estimated when the voters approved the ballot measure that created the independent panel. Can I get some comments before we say goodbye to both of you on that, beginning with you, Commissioner Brahma?
Well, you know, how anybody ever came up with the budget to start with is it should be a story all by itself, because this is the first time a commission has been created and then had to get itself up and running in months rather than years. And the comparison between how this was done versus how the legislature has done it in the past, you know enough about government to know that not all those costs always show up in a particular line item budget. And Lord knows how many people were being retained to do the job with a specific interest in mind. So we worked very, very hard, and Cynthia, actually, who was part of our group that oversaw the budget, made sure there was, and I could say, it's not a matter of how much we spent, I could say none of it was ever wasted.
Well, Cynthia Dye, despite the assertion that none of it was wasted, it did cost millions more than voters thought it would, and there's only $1.5 million for a lawsuit defense. Is that correct?
Well, that is what has been approved for the next fiscal year, but, you know, should be more fiction than the future. But as Vince pointed out, the comparison was really, you know, based on how much money the legislature had expended for the previous redistricting process. And as you know, for that process, I believe they held maybe 3 public hearings. We held 34, and they basically hired a couple of consultants to draw safe districts for both parties. And we went through this exhaustive collaboration with the public to come up with the districts that best reflect communities around the state of California. So it was really an unfair comparison. In fact, someone very early on in the process mentioned that if we had extrapolated from what Arizona spent on the process, which has 17% of the population of the state of California, that it should have been in the 20 million or so mark, and we've done it for a fraction of that.
Well, Commissioners Dye and Brahma, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Cynthia Dye is also CEO of Dynamic Consulting, and Vincent Brahma is also founder of Market Insight Corporation. Appreciate the time you spent with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me bring Bruce Kane into this. Bruce Kane is executive director of the UC Washington Center and is Heller Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley. He's in the nation's capital. Bruce, good to have you back here on Forum. Welcome.
Glad to be on.
Well, let's talk about the political stakes here. I mean, they're even higher because there's still 53 districts. There are no new congressional seats. How do you read that?
I think it really opens up probably the most competitive and potentially earth-shaking congressional election. Let's start with the fact that we don't know what the national conditions are going to be, and we could have another national wave election, and national waves will be amplified during redistricting year because everybody's got new territory that they're not as familiar with, that they don't have the same level of name recognition. So forget about all the open seats. Just if you have another national election layered on top of this redistricting, you could have a big shakeup. Then you have, at the congressional level, a number of members that are going to have to make decisions about where they're going to run. Jerry McNerney, for example, is in a seat in Fremont with Pete Stark. He's probably going to have to move his home and go up into the San Joaquin district to run for it. You have Dreyer, you have Royce. There's a whole bunch of people that are going to have to make decisions. Gary Miller, as to whether they're going to move into other seats. Now, the thing about Congress is that they can make a choice, whereas at the state legislative level, there are residency requirements. So, you know, as I look at it, and I realize the commissioners didn't look at political data, but the rest of us did, it looks to me like there are 28 safe Democratic seats, not so much because of the redistricting, but because you've got highly ghettoized areas throughout the state where there's not much you can do. They're safely, inefficiently Democratic. 28 safe Democratic seats on the Congress. I see about 12 or so safe Republican seats. And then I see about 13 seats that conceivably could go one way or the other. Most of them probably will go in predictable directions, and you probably only get a handful of seats that will actually change. But at least you'll have 13 seats where the parties will look at it and say, okay, we're going to spend serious money here and check out the prospects of winning the seat.
Well, you mentioned McGurney and Stark. Some of these new districts overlap existing ones, and that means, doesn't it, that incumbents of the same party could be facing each other?
Yes. Again, that's going to be more of a problem, Michael, when you get down into the state legislative level, because they just can't, it's harder. There are residency requirements. You really physically have to move. In the case of the Congress, McNerney could be in the process of selling his home in Pleasanton in order to move into the district. But he doesn't even have to do that. He would do it for political reasons, which is it would be hard, I think, to be representing a seat in the San Joaquin if he didn't really have a home in that district. So he will eventually move, but he doesn't have to do it right away, whereas the filing requirements and the rest make it a lot harder situation for members of the legislature. Some of them will go ahead and find an apartment and do it, but it's a much more difficult situation in the case of the state legislature. One thing I will say, Michael, is that, and this bothers me a little bit about this process. I think in general the process went about as well as we could expect. But I do think the obsession with, how many incumbent scalps do we have in this process? How many did we disrupt? I mean, in some sense, that's really kind of a reform criteria that mattered a lot more 20 years ago when we didn't have term limits. But now we already have regular turnover. We all believe that the turnover is part of the problem in Sacramento because these people just don't have the experience. And then you look at the assembly and you see that, there's maybe 19 incumbents that have been placed in districts with another, you could easily be talking about, a quarter of the assembly being, thrown out because of redistricting, let alone the turnover that's mandated by term limits. And you kind of wonder whether the incumbency blind consideration, I could see where you might have it for Congress, but I don't see why it makes any sense whatsoever in the state legislature that already has massive turnover because of term limits.
Well, the most dramatic changes, we should add, are in the Inland Empire and the Central Valley, and that's because of Latino population growth. But I think your perspective is, and it's a fascinating one, that the Republican Party has an opportunity here to field more Latino Republican candidates.
Absolutely, and I think that's a very important point, that they're thinking about suing, but if they think about it long and hard, this is actually an opportunity for them, because some of those seats where there's Latino growth in, as you say, in the Central Valley and San Bernardino, those seats, even though they are leaning towards the Democrats in registration, if you look at them closely, you look at where they were, say, on Prop 8 or on how they react to, say, very liberal candidates like Barbara Boxer as opposed to more moderate Democratic candidates, you can see there's a potential for the Republicans to field Hispanic Republican candidates, and they will have a shot at winning some of those seats. So it provides an incentive for the Republican Party to rethink the way they have identified themselves with minority groups in the state.
All right, we're coming up on a break. I want to give out the phone number and have you join this conversation. Please feel free to do so. It's toll-free. Your reaction to the commission and its work, 866-733-6786. Again, join us now at 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. California Citizen Redistricting Commission has just approved new legislative and congressional political boundaries. More public hearings are scheduled, and several lawsuits are also expected. We're talking this morning with our analyst, John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED-FM, and Bruce Kane, Executive Director of the UC Washington Center and Heller Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley. We also spoke with two of the commissioners, Vincent Barraba, who is Republican commissioner and also founder of Market Insight Corporation, and Cynthia Dye, a Democrat commissioner who is CEO of the Dynamic Consulting Firm in San Francisco. You may have questions or comments, and you may indeed have some responses to the commission's work or questions about your own district. And if you do, you are welcome to join the program. Our toll-free number is available, and it is toll-free. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so please join the conversation again at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org, or simply post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. And again, if you have questions or comments, we'd like to hear from you. Let me go back, if I may, just for a moment, Bruce Kane, to you and get your sense of the historical significance of this. I mean, it's bipartisan. For so long, these kind of gerrymandering districts were made by politicians for the most part. I mean, in a sense, this is pretty dramatic, and it means so a great deal in terms of the history of California, does it not?
It does, but let me just put a little caveat on this and remind you that there have been two redistrictings that were done by the court masters. So actually, almost half the time, the redistricting has been taken out of the hands of the legislature and done by the courts. So California has had experience with incumbent blind, start from scratch, non-political redistrictings. And ironically, those also turned out well for the Democrats. The one that was done in 1991, 1992, the Democrats were kicking and screaming about the court master plan. And then by the end of the decade, that was the decade in which the Democrats basically took control of the legislature by a large amount by the end of the decade, and the congressional delegation turned around as well. So we have had that experience. But having said that, it's still, on a national scale, the most bold experiment with respect to a citizen commission. It had features that we've never seen before, because the selection process itself went out of its way to try to squeeze every ounce of political prejudice out of the system. It made these people write essays. It then reviewed them. It had a voir dire process where the legislative leaders could strike out the people they thought were prejudicial against them and their party. It had a lottery component to it. It had neutral criteria that they had to follow. It had no data, no political data they could look at. You know, nobody, not even Arizona. I was the special master for Arizona. I got to watch that process and correct some of their lines for the court. And even that process was not as elaborate in its attempt to try to be non-political and non-incumbent oriented. So I think it is historic, and I think the rest of the country has been very curious as to whether this experiment will work or not.
Do you have the title special master now, Bruce? I just want that for the record. that's what they call you in Arizona, Special Master Kane.
Yes, I had an office, big special master office for a while.
Well, let me go back to our Sacramento Bureau Chief, John Myers, before I go to your calls and emails. What should voters be looking for in terms of the success of this whole enterprise, John?
Well, I think it depends on the lens to which they went to the polls, and if they voted for Prop 11 and Prop 20, what they thought they were getting, what they thought they wanted out of this process. And I guess I go back then to, the only thing you seemed to be able to guarantee out of it was transparency. And certainly an approach that didn't look at partisan registration. Every time we've done this, partisan registration has been important. Professor Kane's right. I mean, the courts did intervene a couple of times in the past, and Professor Kane knows the redistricting process well. He worked on it in 1980 as one of the people drawing them here in California. I think what's interesting, though, is that the voters, the campaign about Prop 11 and Prop 20 was really all about incumbency, lack of competition. Governor Schwarzenegger sold these two measures that way to the public. And I was going to comment, Professor Kane said that there is an obsession with incumbents in this process. And I do think that I think it's understandable why that is. If you look at those races, I mean, if you go back and look at the legislature and Congress, yes, we do have term limits in the California legislature. That being said, While the actual politicians themselves change, the party affiliation of those districts almost never changes. I was, you know, kind of going back through my notes during the break. I would submit that 2 to 3 seats in the assembly tops, 1 to 2 in the state senate tops, have changed party hands in the last, you know, 10 years that I've been here in Sacramento looking at this. That's 5 out of 120 seats in the legislature. Those are very partisan races where you know the outcome. Some of that is demographics and political affiliation, but some of it could have been the way the districts are drawn. In Congress, we have had no incumbent turnover except for one in recent years, and that was the one we talked about. Congressman Jerry McNerney from the Bay Area, who, by the way, has actually already said he's picking up and moving his home to San Joaquin County. So he is moving into his new district. And I think the optics of politics there makes it good for him to live there. But McNerney is the only party turnover in recent years in Congress in California. He beat a Republican, Richard Pombo. Every other time, not only party, but incumbent has remained time after time again. And I do think the one change you will get in some of these cases is incumbent members of Congress will be going home in some cases. I mean, I could run down the list. I won't do the whole list. But let's look at the Bay Area. Zoe Lofgren and Mike Honda, both Democrats, drawn into the same district in the Central Valley. Jeff Denham, a Republican, Dennis Cardoza, a Democrat, Jim Costa, a Democrat, all three drawn into the same district. In L.A., Howard Berman and Brad Sherman, both powerful Democrats drawn into the same district. And there are a few others here. And so you are going to see, I think, incumbency turnover as a result of this redistricting. If that's enough for the voters to say the process is fair now and I'm okay with it, you know, that remains to be seen.
There's a listener named Helen Bruce Kane who says, Mr. Krasny said that the new redistricting process was designed to make districts more competitive. While some people may have assumed that, the official groups initiating this process and supporting the ballot measure never said that this was a goal. The goal was an open and transparent process using fair criteria. Is that a fair statement, Bruce Kane?
Absolutely, and it's a really, really important point because the reform community was really divided into two. There were some who wanted absolutely, you know, more competitive seats or and were interested in fair outcomes, and there were others, and I think the Common Cause is a good example of that, who said, no, all you really want to do is have a process that's blind to political factors and uses neutral criteria, and then we'll let the chips fall where they may. And what you got was something which was an amalgamation of those two ideas. With respect to the non-white areas, the voting rights protected areas, they were using sort of an outcome, you know, let's look at the outcome, or how many majority-minority seats you're going to create, which is a very political way of looking at it. And then with respect to the non-white areas, I mean to the white areas, they were largely using the sort of neutral criteria approach that the League of Women Voters and Common Cause wanted. So what you had was a mishmash of these two things, but there was nowhere in the language anything about how many competitive seats or how you would create competitive seats. And so what you got was something that we knew from our studies at the IGS was going to be the normal amount of competitive seat. That is, when we did simulations of hundreds of plans, we found that on average about a quarter to a fifth of the seats would fall into some competitive registration range. And that's essentially what you got with all these plans is kind of the normal amount. Most of the seats in California, no matter who's drawing the lines, are not going to be competitive because people tend to live in these homogeneous clumps. And it's very hard to create competitive seats in downtown Los Angeles or even in the Bay Area because there just are not enough Republicans. So we got what we would expect, which is about a quarter to a fifth of the seats are potentially competitive. I will point out that doesn't mean that a quarter of the seats are going to flip. I mean, if you go back into the 1990s when the court drew the lines, you had 270 congressional races. Only 12 of those races actually flipped. So it'll be a much smaller number of seats that actually changes hands. It'll be more than we had last decade. Absolutely, I agree with that. But it's not going to be anything like the vision of competitive seats up and down the state that Arnold Schwarzenegger had in his mind. And I don't think it would have been possible, even with an explicit criteria, to transform the state that way, because you would have violated Voting Rights Act and city and county district lines up and down the state in order to try to create these competitive seats.
But just with respect to the state legislature for a moment, Bruce Kane, this fear about reducing influence of Republicans and creating a two-thirds Democratic majority in the state legislature, how real is that?
It's possible. I don't think it's the most likely outcome. But if you look at the number of seats that that are, you know, called swing seats, and you look at the assessments how many Democratic seats, how many Republican seats. It's within the range that if it's a good Democratic year and the Democrats field very good candidates in these areas, that they could get to a place where they control the supermajority vote and therefore will be able to raise taxes if they want to. I kind of wonder whether Democrats would do that even if they had the power, but anyway, and to override vetoes if indeed there was a Republican governor. So yes, it's within the range of possibilities, given the way the lines are drawn.
And let me bring our callers in. And David, we begin with you. Good morning. Welcome to the forum.
Good morning. My question is, to your experts, is around the open primaries changes. I'm not sure at the more localized level what effect that's going to have, but on the state level, certainly, it would allow for more moderate Republican candidates to run for office, if I'm not mistaken. How would that overlay with the redistricting? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, and thank you for that question. An important one. John Myers, again, that's part of the game-changing here.
It's brought up a lot, Michael. I mean, the caller raises a point that a lot of people are really going to be fascinating, think it's going to be a very fascinating dynamic come next year, because we really don't know what the interaction of those things are. I mean, we've got districts that were drawn without an eye toward incumbency, and now we have a primary system that will be dramatically different than the closed primary system has been in California, where the top two vote getters, regardless of party, will move the top two vote getters in June will move to the November general election. You could have two Democrats move to November in some districts. You could have two Republicans move in some areas. There is a large argument out there, largely made by the political supporters of Prop 14, that was the open primary last year on the ballot, that that will moderate the tendencies of both Democrats and Republicans. They'll have to appeal to swing voters, to crossover voters. Whether that, again, plays out, I don't know if anybody has a great crystal ball on that, but I do think that these two changes to the electoral process in California have been talked about so much. And, you know, when the dust settles, either in June or in November of next year, and we see whether we got anything different, and we collectively as Californians, then I think, you know, there's going to be also the question of, okay, if we didn't get enough, what else do we want to do? And I think that's what some government reformers say here, is that if, you know, these aren't necessarily the silver bullets, and people are going to have to be deciding how much change they want, how much is enough for them in the political process to make them feel more comfortable and supportive of politicians. I mean, we Californians don't trust politicians, and I'm not sure you can change that by changing the rules, but we'll see next fall.
Again, John Myers is Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED-FM, and Steve is our next caller. Steve, join us. You're on.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm Steve Chesson, President of Californians for Electoral Reform. And there's two comments I wanted to make. First was on the irony of the Republican Party putting so much investment, especially, I believe, Mr. Charles Munger put over $1 billion of his own money into trying to get these measures passed, and it's going to end result with fewer Republican seats in the state legislature. But that keys into my second comment, which is what we're going to see is the representation index, that is the number of people who actually vote for winning candidates, the percentage of votes going for winning candidates, actually going down because of the increase in competitive seats. And if we really wanted a system that guaranteed full and fair representation for all Californians, we really have to seriously consider moving to a system of proportional representation.
Well, Bruce Kane, let me go to you on this. In fact, I'm reminded of an article John Wildermuth did about all this recently, where he said this is an ultimate zero-sum game.
There is a lot of people look at proportional representation as a less zero-sum way of thinking about descriptive representation, and people could just, instead of trying to draw districts that either create more competitive seats or create more Latino seats or more African-American seats, you know, that's kind of a very top-down process, and it kind of makes assumptions about voters that they may not want made about them, that they are going to vote along racial lines or ethnic lines or party lines. And it was You know, and many of the people at PR that support PR proportional representation say, you know, we could get away from all this whole messy business of redistricting by moving to some sort of proportional representation system where people get to pick the parties, and you don't have to do it through a districting process. But you know, that's a hard sell because we're an Anglo-American country. We've been using district-based systems for a long period of time. Even San Francisco has struggled with proposals about proportional representation, and they're kind of, you know, you would think they'd be the first ones to try the new cereal, right? I mean, you know, that they're the Mikey of politics, and you would think that they would want to do it, but attempts to try to sell that to people in San Francisco have always gotten kind of reluctance, and so, you know, we settle for the weakest forms of proportional representation. So, you know, I understand what the caller is saying, but for the time being, I see us as pretty much, particularly at the state level and at the congressional level, as stuck with the current system for all its problems and flaws.
And again,
well, I would hope that the good government groups, after they look at the outcome and they see that the representation index goes down, and that it doesn't really change the nature of the partisan gridlock in Sacramento, that they would start looking at systems of proportional representation. There are some, by the way, that are still candidate-based, so you don't have to vote, you know, based just on a party label, that you do get to vote for the people that you want.
Steve, thank
yes,
you for
I know.
Your call. Yeah. Let me go to a couple of your emails. And by the way, you can email us forum@kqed.org or join us by phone at our toll-free number 866-733-6786 or post question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. A couple of specific questions. John Myers, this is a listener, Angela, who says she's talking about why split tiny Lake County in half. It's so small. Why bother? Splitting our tiny county takes away any small amount of political unity and the strength that our little unique rural area has to begin with. And another listener says, while I appreciate the difficulty faced by the redistricting commission, they didn't follow their own mission to consider geography in forming my state Senate district. Pleasant Hill and Martinez are suburban bedroom communities whose residents largely work in Alameda and San Francisco counties and receive our news from media in Contra Costa, Alameda, and San Francisco. In the new map, we are included in a district with Napa, Lake, and Yolo counties, all rural and agricultural. Pleasant Hill and Martinez would be much better represented by the so-called Ramon district. These are the kind of responses, I think, almost in miniature that we're getting to the work of the commission.
Yeah, and I actually know a little bit about the fights here in particular. So lucky me, I can respond at least a little bit to the caller to the emailer, because I saw the commission's work during these very difficult moments. Folks from Lake County, folks from the East Bay, folks down in Union City and Fremont and Newark, who were very unhappy, the South Asian community, about being split into separate congressional districts there. A couple of things. First of all, it depends on what district we're talking about, the state assembly, state senate, and Congress. All those maps do not line up for lots of reasons. I mean, Congress and the state senate are much larger population districts because we've got a state of 38 million people and fewer seats. State assembly are smaller districts by population. But the commission seemed to feel, and Lake County, let's take that one first, they seemed to feel that there were only so many ways that they could put those areas together. And so I think in the Lake County instance, they felt as though if they couldn't keep that area whole, like, say, in the state assembly or senate, they would do it in Congress. You know, some of those folks wanted to be with Napa, some didn't. This goes back to the whole thing of people coming to testify to the commission about where my community lines are, because community lines are invisible on maps, but people know, or they feel they know, where their community is. So that's part of it. Also, too, I think the folks in the East Bay and that Contra Costa County area, the commissioner said that they struggled there in part with the Federal Voting Rights Act. And again, we have to look at a couple of things. I don't want to bore people in the minutiae here, but if I can just give a little bit of detail. The Federal Voting Rights Act affects California in two different ways. One part of the Federal Voting Rights Act has four counties in California where the rights of minority voters historically were threatened. And as a result, those five counties, there are very strict criteria about how maps are drawn. Those are Kings County, Merced, Monterey, and Yuba counties. The commission felt that when they were having to draw those, they're called Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act districts, they had to draw those first and then kind of move out from there. And those those criteria affected where they drew lines for population boundaries and things like that everywhere else. The other part of the Voting Rights Act we talked about earlier is about the rights of minority voters in general. They're called majority-minority districts. Can you draw districts that really have enough presence? And that's usually Latinos, though African-Americans in L.A. certainly have a case there, too. And those districts affected a lot of other parts of the state. And so, you know, people in particular communities say, why is this line here? My response is, not completely defending the commission, the lines ultimately have to go somewhere. And when you get population issues, minority rights issues, in Congress, it has to be the deviation is to one person. Every congressional district in California is almost exactly equal. They can only be one person off. That's a very tough task.
And let me remind listeners, not only remind you, but urge you to see the drafts of the maps we've been talking about this whole hour by simply going to kqed.org/forum and finding the link there. And let me go to more of your calls in the meantime. Chris from Oakland joining us. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Kane, Tom DeLay, the mid-decade redistricting in Texas to make Texas more Republican, they did the same sort of thing, although it wasn't mid-decade, in Georgia. What do you think is the possibility of good government groups taking this model to places that are majority Republican instead of a place that's majority Democrat?
Bruce Kane.
You know, I think it's less likely for two reasons. One is you need to have a state that has a vigorous initiative system because there aren't many examples of legislatures that are willing to surrender this power, whether they're Democratic or Republican. And the second is that, in general, ironically, Democrats are more inclined to go for these kinds of reform proposals. It happens to be the case in California that the Republicans were in favor of it, but that was largely because they just don't have any prospect of ever controlling the line drawing process. In states where they do control the line drawing process, such as Texas or Pennsylvania, they're not anxious to give it up any more than the Democratic incumbents are. So really, I think the key variable is you need to have an initiative system where people can propose these ideas and bypass the legislature, because you're just not going to get it through a legislature.
And let me thank the caller. And some more emails. Christine says, it is actually a disservice to refer to these as maps. What the commission has done is created new district layers. A map should have a legend that shows us attribute data about the various districts so that upon viewing, a member of the general public can discern something about the logic for the drawing of these districts. All the commission has given us is geometry. It is left to those of us familiar with using census data and GIS to draw any conclusions on our own. I'm very disappointed with the product produced by the commission, regardless of what the results of the product may be.
Michael? I could say something to that person. On August 15th, when the commission certifies these maps, they will release a very large report that goes area by area, probably in some cases district by district, to describe how they got their decisions, how they made it, who they heard from, what the district looks like. So, yes, now it's much more technical. I would tell the person in 2 weeks they're going to get to see a lot more of that. They'll be able to get online and decide for themselves.
Here's another listener, Martin, who says, why aren't the districts simply drawn along county lines? It seems that would be the most objective approach. I'm Bruce Kane.
That's called one person, one vote. There was a time prior to 1962 when we had something called the federal system where, as in the federal U.S. Senate, we were allowed to have an upper house that was not based on one person, one vote, i.e. equal population. And ironically, when Governor Warren was, governor in California, he very much favored that system and felt that it was the way to go. When he became the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, he became persuaded that there was something fundamentally wrong about having unequally populated districts. And we got Baker versus Carr and Reynolds versus Sims and the whole apportionment revolution. And one of the things that did was it got rid of upper houses that were based on something other than one person, one vote. Now, it leaves us, ironically,
with this anomaly, which is that the U.S. Senate and the Electoral College are not based on one person, one vote. So the most visible and important, upper house bodies are based not on the same principle that all the local governments and state governments are forced to conform to. And that's the reason that the counties have wildly different populations, ranging from very small ones like Mono to very large ones like Los Angeles. And so you have to break up the counties, you have to break up the cities sometimes in order to make sure that each one of these districts is equally populated.
And again, Bruce Kane with us from Washington this morning is executive director of the UC Washington Center and also Heller Professor of Political Science at UC Berkeley. And here's Lee, who writes, my only complaint about the process is not the fault of the redistricting commission, because it was mandated by federal law, the requirement that ethnic racial groups be guaranteed safe districts, even if that violates actual community geography. There is no moral justification for writing ethnic racial preferences into the law today. A century ago, the law discriminated against some minorities, but that was corrected many decades ago. Now it just encourages people to think of themselves by their ethnic racial identification instead of as Americans. How does this help America? Can we comment, Bruce King?
A couple years ago, the Congress had to renew the Voting Rights Act, and there was a lot of discussion in the civil rights community as to whether some of the features of the Voting Rights Act, like the presumption that those four counties in California had to be treated differently, should be reexamined, that maybe what was true 40 years ago isn't true now. And for a variety of political reasons, the Congress bypassed a substantial revision of the Voting Rights Act. My own take is that there actually are areas of racial polarization in California, and that in those areas of racial polarization, you can get injustice to the minority communities and dividing them up. On the other hand, I think it's probably the case that, the attempt of some minority activists to say that as John pointed out, you can always create an additional minority seat, or maybe it was Vince Barabo said that, you can always create an additional seat. And I think that kind of logic, that there's that you must maximize at every single instance, no matter how uncompact, the court has cut back on that considerably, and I think that was a wise decision. I think that you certainly don't want discrimination against minorities, but you don't want it to completely distort the whole line-drawing process so that everything else is thrown by the wayside.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. I want to thank Bruce Kane, Executive Director of the UC Washington Center and Heller Professor of Political Science, and our own John Myers, Sacramento Bureau Chief for KQED-FM. You can see these maps, if you want to call them maps, and we have been, kqed.org/forum. The link is there. You can also reach the commission if you need a map, and people have been calling about a hard copy, 866-356-5217. Thanks also to the two commissioners, Vincent Barabo and Cynthia Dye. Another hour of Forum up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.